You can listen, I can chat about anything.
We know this.
I can chat nonsense. I sometimes actually wonder, why, James, why do you know me?
Well, you know, we all have our crosses to bear. Or we do our bits for society.
Well, that's a big one. That's a big one. If there was ever
help,
a
help the, helping the community.
Yes.
What we do need to do is go on here. I need to do this because...
There he goes.
When it goes on, it's out of sync a little bit.
Yeah.
That gives him a chance just to sink in.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
Our mouths are moving in the same time as what's been said.
These are the things that we've learned over a period of time, isn't it?
It's just all an education. It's how business progresses.
It's very professional. It's a nice little setup you've got here.
Thanks very much.
Do you know the people that don't know what they're coming into? I think they're used to maybe just going into a little room, a dark room or a wee closet filled with just rubbish. Spend a wee bit of time evolving this.
Mm-hmm.
As we're proud of it. That's very true. And again, you know, when you're starting this, we had to put our own money in, but then with the help of, you know, Business Gateway, they end up helping us dramatically. And I think that's a lot of businesses that are out there. You know, there's a lot of help out there for them, but they just don't know where to go.
Know where it is. Yeah,
and that's exactly it.
Mm-hmm.
So even have you enjoyed your choo-choo train all the way up from sunny down south?
I enjoyed it coming up this morning because, as you know, it's a fantastic journey up from Preston. You're coming through the lakes and then the lower Dumfries and round there. And it's a beautiful journey.
Mm-hmm.
Far cry from the one that I had on Thursday night that took me 4 hours for a 2.5 hour journey.
Nice.
From London up to Preston. So today's when a brand new TransPennine Express, I might add, with the wee trolley.
A wee trolley.
Yeah, beautiful train, beautiful journey. And it's always wonderful to be in Edinburgh, of course. You know.
Well, as long as I had a double Kit Kat. Did I have a double Kit Kat? Well, I bought Highland Spring.
Highland Spring, yes. Not the Kit Kat, no.
They've just let themselves down. No. Goodness me.
Absolutely.
So this is the first time you've came on our podcast, so thank you. So for our listeners and for our listeners and viewers, this is James Barker. He is, what'd you say, you're a friend of the stars, perhaps?
I won't say I was a friend of the stars. I've certainly worked with quite an eclectic and interesting bunch of people, for sure. You know, I mean, my life journey seemed to have coincided with meeting an awful lot of people who are now household names in sport, in business, in politics. So, yeah, I'm blessed. I'm blessed. So, I left home at 17. I should really have stayed on at college and gone to university, but I was very unhappy in North Wales where I was brought up between 10 and 17. Not family-wise, just I didn't like the area. And I wanted to get back to the Northwest or do something exciting. So I sat my exams for the intelligence corps. I did a 3-day induction and I passed my exams, but unfortunately they didn't have any spaces for 12 months. So I ended up going in the Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineers, which was probably a mistake. I should have waited for the intelligence corps because all my family had worked for the Foreign Office. My great uncle William was knighted, was Czech ambassador. My cousin Mike's been military attaché to 3 separate Scandinavian countries. So we had a family history in, in politics and things like that. And then there was a little backstory. When I was growing up, my mother was a governess. She spoke 5 languages. So she looked after the family behind Schindler Lifts.
Really?
So if anybody goes in any lift anywhere in the world, it'll either be Otis or Schindler. So my childhood was, all my mates were going to Torremolinos and Blackpool, and I was going to Zurich, picked up in a chauffeur-driven Bentley, taken up to the mansion above Zug, out on the yacht, you know, an amazing experience for a young boy. And it was all down to my mum, really. She knew what she was doing. You know, I used to get put on the flight at Manchester with an air hostess and met at the other end from being 3-4 years of age. Can you imagine that now, you know? Hostess escorted tours is just, you know. But what she was doing was was giving me confidence, you know, self-esteem, and you know, all that kind of stuff, and being comfortable in lots and lots of different company, you know, high-end stuff, low-end stuff. It's like, you know, to me now, I can be, you know, in the finest restaurants in London with politicians, or I can be in a Spit and Sawdust pub in Salford with my mates. It makes no odds.
Or hanging about with me.
Or hanging about with you, Johnny, and that is, which is another that level. Is an experience. that is a whole new experience and a whole new level for any human being, I would say. Well, yeah.
I never, for the time that I've met you and known you, I never knew any of that.
You didn't?
No,
that's what podcasts are for.
That's what podcasts are for, Johnny, yeah.
Wow, so that's quite an interesting.
So, yeah, I went 17. I was in the forces. As I said, I should have held out really and gone to uni, but I didn't. So everybody, you know, as I say to my lad now, you know, you can take a different journey to your destination, and it's not always a bad thing. But I think when I came out of the forces, I was a bit lost. Well, not lost, but it was during the miner strike. Came back to Manchester, got a job during the day as a freight forwarding agent, and then at night I worked in a bar. Not a waitress, not a cocktail waitress, I might add. I was just working in a bar. But and then I met some rather, how shall we say, colourful, interesting people. But I think the thing was, because of the upbringing I'd had, I didn't really know anything about fear. So I didn't know that certain individuals were highly dangerous individuals. I just thought that they were fun people to hang around.
Right.
And it was only a few months later that I realised that they were some of the most serious criminals in North Manchester. So, I did have a rather interesting association for 12 months. And I sailed very close to the wind without knowing that I was sailing close to the wind. So they all ended up doing very long stretches in prison, and I didn't, because on the fateful night that they were caught doing what they were doing, then I was not there. So
wow.
It was, as often happens in life, a twist of fate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I never had a criminal record, and I never got done for anything, and as years later, when I stood for police and crime commissioner, they do a forensic check on your history to make sure that you're literally squeaky clean. Otherwise, you've no chance. I mean, it's a, you know, the police and crime commissioner, for instance, is a very, people don't realize what a serious position it is, you know, and how much responsibility you have, not only for the police and the fire service and the ambulance service, but also all the charity work, all the charities, you've got all the responsibility, and you've got a big budget every police and crime commissioner has. So so that was the early days, and then I went into financial services. I was with Royal Life for 4 years down in Manchester. Not for me. I'm not really cut out to be stuck in an office. It's not my thing. And from there, I went into insulation, and I worked as a national surveyor for 4 or 5 years, really, because I just wanted to get around the country and see different parts of the UK. And I had that wanderlust in me, as you do in your mid-20s, and I didn't have any ties. So I travelled around Cornwall, Devon, East Anglia, the North East, London. And then, of course, I started developing this interest in thinking, well, if they're paying me what they're paying me, then they must be doing quite well. So then I wanted to go into the next level, which was set up on my own, which I did.
And what was the driver for that then? Was it just the money side of it, you
thought? No, it's never been money for me, to be perfectly honest. Even now, you know, I mean, I'm comfortable, I've got enough. But money's never been the driver. Right. It's always been the experience and the people. So the freedom, you know, that's essentially what running, as Johnny, as you two know, running your own business gives you freedom. It gives you the ability to explore other aspects of your life, what you want to do. And, you know, so, yeah, I went in first time I was 32. Actually, it was a guy that I'd met. I did his roof. I sprayed his roof with insulation. and he had, Bill had 14 florist shops right. in Manchester, Greater Manchester, and he drove a Rolls Royce and a Porsche, and yeah, he was a bit blingy, but he liked the product, and he said, well, James, he wooed me, you know, he took me out in a Porsche, and he introduced me to his glamorous wife and his family, and he said, how about I invest in you and we'll set up a business and, you know, you can run it and I'll put the money in. So it seemed like a perfect opportunity, which it was. And then, unfortunately, his main business got into trouble,
right.
which obviously had a knock-on effect with me mm-hmm. because he was the investor and I was the one doing the hard yards. So, yeah, that was my first failure. And, of course, as you know, that's what we learn off.
Yep, absolutely. So,
yeah, that was my first failure. And tragically, I found out 2 years later that this was a guy that never smoked, that was very healthy, went out on the golf course and dropped dead at 58.
Wow.
You know?
So how old were you when you did the spray foaming? So you worked for a company beforehand.
Mm-hmm. 26.
26. And yeah. was it 26, 27 when you started your own business?
No, 32. 32,
you said. So sorry, I'd done.
Yeah, I mean, Caroline, bless her, was the accountant for the company that I worked for. Scottish, right. Of course.
Scottish.
Very good with money and not with parting with it very easily. Yeah, she was a great woman, and she said to me 4 or 5 years in, she said, look, James, you're making a lot of money for them, but they're never going to give you a share. They're never going to give you a partnership. So my advice is plow your own furrow, which is what I did. So, yeah, so 32. So then I went back into the industry, just freelance, really. And at the same time, my mentor and good friend, Joe Egan, who had a big legal practice in Bolton at the time, was a big Bolton Wanderers fan like me. And he took a shine to me. He always liked my, he said, you've got confidence, James. I've never known anybody with confidence like you and positivity. I said, well, you know, that's down to my mum probably, you know, and the way she brought me up. But Joe is a great guy, a real philanthropist. And just a great guy, basically. And he said, look, the property was good then. You know, it was still before the crash in 2008. And he introduced me to one of his friends, a conveyancing solicitor, and we started buying houses. And David would do the conveyancing. He would do the acquisitions, arrange the mortgages, all the financial stuff, and I would do the project management, rip them out, put the teams together. And we flipped a lot of them. You know, we bought them, renovated them and sold them. And, of course, I realised years later that we probably should have kept them, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We did about 40 houses in 10 years. Oh. But we still ended up, and we parted. We're still good mates, David and me. We ended up parting and we just span a coin.
Right.
For which ones would go to right. whom, you know, and right, very, okay. very democratic, really. And so he got three, I got three, and I then added more to it. And yeah, that was my first successful business venture, really, the property. Yeah.
See, when you mention this, and it's incredible.
Mm.
What runs alongside business is family as well.
Mm.
How did you balance the two up? From that, at that age?
Well, at that age, I didn't have any kids, so I wasn't married in my 20s. I didn't have any, apart from my mum.
Right.
My dad had passed away. I was the only child, so I didn't have the responsibilities. But running parallel to this, there was a whole new other side in my life at the time. When I was about 18, 19, I got very friendly by chance with the captain of Bolton Wanderers, who is now the manager of Kidderminster, but is famous for managing Hull City and having his players' half-time team talk on the pitch at Manchester City. That was the big story back then.
All right.
So it happened purely and simply because his one of the family were working And that's how I got the introduction. But Phil was quite a character, and he shared my love of music. And we met in the Players' Lounge. A month later, we went to a Robert Palmer gig in Manchester. And, yeah, that started the journey in football. And from then on, I hooked onto the psychology of sports, and that's what really interested me, because as Phil went through from being a player to a manager, he became assistant to Sam Allardyce.
Right, okay.
And Big Sam was obviously the catalyst to Bolton's great revival and the Premiership years, and Yuri Djorkaeff, Hierro, and all these wonderful players and top six finishes, Europe, etc. But the big thing from that period for me was I met a guy called Mike Ford. And Mike Ford isn't mentioned about that period, though Sam refers to it in his book. Sam had inherited Mike Ford from Phil Brown, because Phil was also very interested in sports psychology. And so Mike was inherited by Sam, and Mike was a genius, an absolute genius at getting the optimum out of players. Just that extra 5% sports psychology. I mean, Sam had a huge team of backroom staff. He couldn't afford huge transfer fees, but he could afford to get loads and loads of staff that would give you those little percentages, and Mike was the man behind it. So if you look back on those old Match of the Day clips, you will see a guy sat next to Sam, and that guy was Mike Ford. And Mike went on to run the whole of the Chelsea Academy under the Abramovich years, and then he ended up in the States in the NFL, and, wow. You know, just an amazing guy.
I hear a lot of managers from the Scottish side of football, and it is they go down that rabbit hole of the psychology, and then in business, you attach the culture to a business and how everybody's made to feel, listened to, the recognition that everybody wants that recognition. But the psychology is the number one favourite. It's the topic of choice. You need to get in the hearts and minds of these players and your team in business. I mean, Alex Ferguson was prominent in that. He was fantastic at that, seemingly. Yeah. And he showed that over the years that he was in with Manchester United. You know, how have you talk about psychology? I want to rewind back. You were talking about university, and I don't know if there was a sore topic not going to university. You were mentioning that. You know, why do you feel that? Why do you think that?
I don't know. I think it's certainly not, I'm not resentful about it. And I think I think university to me is, apart from the academic side of it, depending on which university you go to, it's the associations you make, you know. I've always been, you know, I mean, I grew up with Steinbeck and Hemingway and Sven Hassel. I was reading books from, this is another thing about my mum, again, clever. When I used to go around to my granddad's when I was 7 or 8 years of age on a Sunday for Sunday dinner, I would always be in front of the fire, and she'd buy me the Sunday Telegraph or the Observer. Mm-hmm. That was at 7 or 8 years of age. So I was obviously interested in history, and I was interested in the world. So she said, oh, well, you know, I'll get him these papers, and he's learning about things, and he's always learning about language. So all very, very, very clever, you know, clever.
One of the things I've picked up on already with your story so far is that it's the relationships that you've built up with certain people that have, you know, that you've gravitated to someday, and it's that connections that you make in life and business that take you, the doors that get opened through these connections.
Totally.
And massive. Yeah.
People, to me, I mean, we were talking about this before we started the interview, when when you're in the church at the end and they're saying the messages, and this guy or this woman was this or was that. At the end of the day, it's your experiences with people, you know. Mm-hmm. I know lots and lots of very, very, very wealthy people, and some of them are enormously popular. Some of them, but a lot of them aren't, and they're unfulfilled. It's not about the money, it's about the journey.
Correct.
And it's about the people that you meet. You know, I mean, you've known me a while, Johnny. I mean, I've got friends all over the UK, all different backgrounds, or all different politics, all different religions, creeds. You know, that's what makes life rich, you know.
It's the connections with people. And we mentioned previously, it's the mark you're leaving on people. You know, now this is all coming back to me, the conversations we've had, you know. Now I understand, like, everybody's got a value, their parents, but now I understand it even more. So with your mum, when you spoke about your mum previously, and it's parenting back in the day, where a lot of people will say if they were a 60s child, a 50s child, whatever it may be, just like, no, I was a 90s child there, because I'm still really young. But it's so interesting, the stability or the grounding that you get and the education that you get from a parent or parents that make you either excel or make it a slow transition into adulthood, into business. It seems like to me you've had a flavour for all different types of cultures and your mum's created for you that's excelled you. Now, the question I'm getting to you is, how much has your mother helped you compared to university would help you? Because the question I've got is, how far, I've been told a university degree, whether you come a 1-1 from Oxford, will last maybe a year or 2 years until it's about who you work for and who you know. But it sounds like to me that your mum's gave you more than a university degree would give you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I totally appreciate that, you know, I had a very eclectic upbringing. You know, I mean, I was hanging on the back of a yacht going around the Zugersee when most of my pals were on 10 pence rides in Blackpool. You know, I had a completely different upbringing as a child, and subconsciously I'm aware that what she did was make me very comfortable with people. So whether they were multi-millionaires, prime ministers, rock stars, sports people, I always had the ability to communicate on a certain level without feeling remotely intimidated or talk to them in a different way, or, mm-hmm. you know, and that has served me very, very well, especially the last 15, 20 years where, you know, I've become involved in quite high octane situations in politics and celebrities and all the rest of it. So it's been a great, great journey so far, and I think the best is yet to come. Yeah.
I think you should name drop a wee bit.
He wants to know. Do you want to get the autographs?
Who are these people?
I'll give you my autograph just now, Michael.
I've got yours.
So
I'd already had the thing with Sam, and ironically that when I had my first child, Jack, his mother had done Sam and his wife's hair for 20 years previous. So we kind of had an association, you know. So very lucky with the Phil Brown connection that led me to Mike Ford and led me to Sam. So then I was in watching it. You know, I used to go to the training ground and I saw this psychology in the war room that Sam built. And, you know, it was amazing. The attention to detail was incredible. And that's why Sam was so successful. And also the way he looked after people, the way he looked after players, you know, fine details about where the players' families were they happy? Did they have the right house? Were they going to the kids going to the right school? You know, he was in tune with all that stuff ahead of, I mean, it's now everybody does it, yeah. But back then it was a bit groundbreaking, you know?
Mm.
And then he, so from there, I met all my heroes, you know, I met all the players, some of the coaches, I remember being in a room like this with Terry McDermott and Graeme Souness chewing the fat and my boyhood heroes. The only thing I would say about that is, and I know this is a cliche, but you don't necessarily want to meet your heroes.
Yeah, I've heard that quite a lot.
Yeah, because they can disappoint you. And you've got to remember that they're just normal human beings at the end of the day. And they're not gods, and they still bleed like you and me, and they still sit on the pan every morning. Yep. So they're all They're all flawed, like we all are. But I don't think it's necessarily a good thing sometimes to meet your heroes. I mean, I probably had a mixture where I would say 50% of them, yeah, I'm truly privileged to have met them, and 50% I wish I'd not. But, you know. it's like advertising.
You're safe with me.
It's like advertising, isn't it? You know, they say marketing, you know, you can spend 50% and it'll be a tremendous success, yep, and 50% right. It won't. But you don't know which 50 it is and which 50 it's not, you know.
Yeah.
And you might have met them on a worst day. You know, they could have been having a horrendous day, and that's your, now your opinion of them, that you've met them on that one, that specific time.
Yeah.
And it's like us, we're all human, exactly. We all go through it.
So your business journey, like you've mentioned that about the relationships, you've got you're obviously easy to get on with, and I know that. You can listen, you can observe, you've got all these characteristics.
Mm.
Now, I know you from Metropole Insulations, you do the foam, you do the sound insulation, you've got that part of the business. You've also got the presenting, you're going to be doing that as well. Am I allowed to say that?
Right, yeah, the radio stuff that I'm working on at the moment with Peter at the BBC, a bit of an iconic figure. Very lucky to have him as a mentor. But that's been an itch that I've been trying to itch for a long time. Mm-hmm. It first came to prominence just before lockdown when somebody got hold of a recording of me doing a Richard Burton thing. Funnily enough, it was War of the Worlds. If you remember War of the Worlds, he did the intro to it, and I'd just done it for a bit of fun. Mm-hmm. And Bauer Media, that own a lot of the radio stations, got hold of this and contacted me by email and said, we've heard your voice, James. Would you like to come in and spend some time in the studio with us? So, and I did, and I did 3 hours in the studio with them, and it went well, but it was literally just before lockdown.
Right, okay.
So then everything went, you know.
The way it goes,
the way it goes. And then, you know, I thought, well, you know, I've tried it, but then the itch was still there. So yeah. I moved down to Hampshire, and my good neighbours, Richard and Rowena, were friends with a legendary Welsh broadcaster from the BBC. So I got in touch with Peter, and then he said, right, well, send me some recordings and get me some big interviews.
Yes.
So I got him some big interviews because at that point, you know, I got into the political world. So I got Rupert Lowe's very in the news at the moment.
Oh, yes.
very much so. Lovely man, Rupert, you know. It's a terrible shame. But and then Gareth Ainsworth, the renowned Wickham Wanderers manager and player.
Was he at Wimbledon as well?
He was at Wimbledon, in the Premier League. Yep. When they were in the Premier League, yeah, he was unfortunate with injuries. Great guy. And then Mr. Farage, of course. Mm-hmm. So I got an interview with Nigel. So Peter was, you know, pretty impressed that, you know, I think he thought when I dropped these names to him, and of course, Ant Middleton, who's a friend of mine now.
Yeah.
I think Peter thought, well, he's talking these names. He doesn't really know these people. So, and then when he actually got the interviews, quite in-depth ones, where I got them, what I wanted to do with the interviews was get another side out of them.
Yep.
You know, I wanted to show the public a different side to what they're used to seeing. So with Farage, I did his Dulwich College years with Ant, I did more about his rough times, just different angles. So.
Is that purely on a tactic to let people find how relatable people are as well? You put them on a perch here, thinking they're all seen and all wise, and back to, you said, you don't want to meet your heroes sometimes.
Yeah.
But everybody's human. We have acts to crime, we've got worries, we've got concerns. But it's how adversity creates you and shapes you and with that resilience.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic hearing things, because for the time that I've known you, I never knew half of this, which is really, really great, James. Really, you've done a hell of a lot. So if I was to ask you one of these questions that you might hear a lot on podcasts, if you were to go back and do it again, even though there's lessons to be learned in everything you've done in life, is there anything that you would change?
Probably the only thing I would change, because I had this wanderlust and I was always, you know, restless and there was something else and there was something else, I probably didn't treat some of the ladies in my life as well as I could have done. And but there you go. You know, you're talking about Alex Ferguson there, and I remember a few interviews with Alex where he said, you know, the mum brought the kids up. She was the family rock. I was never there. I was in a car traveling 400 miles looking at a player, or was away with a team. And yeah, I think that would be, yeah, I wouldn't say it's a regret or I would do anything different. I probably wouldn't. I mean, in my early 20s, late teens, when I was running around with a dangerous crowd, I mean, that could have gone one or two ways. You know, I could have got caught. I could have done a stretch and, you know, my life would have took a different a different course. But it's always forks in the road, isn't it? There's been a series of situations where I've had forks in the road, and I think fortunately I've took the right fork.
It sounds like you have, and it sounds like you've had a hell of a journey. Mm. And there's still, you know, you've still got years in you.
There's still some, you know, petrol in the tank, Johnny. You know?
Even if it is expensive.
It certainly is. It certainly is. No, I'm really excited about the next 4 years, both personally and professionally. I'm very fortunate. I've got some great people in my life, great friendships, all different backgrounds, all different creeds. And what I would say, you know, especially to young people watching this, is you know, don't live in an echo chamber. Don't be narrow-minded. Don't shut down friendships because you might disagree with them over politics or religion. You know, you should embrace everybody from, if they're your friends, they're your friends. Mm-hmm. It's irrespective of what their colour, creed, political views are. You know, I mean, I see it in London where, you know, I've heard groups of women say they would never date a Tory, or they would never date a Brexiteer or something like that. And, you know, my friends are socialists. Some of them are communists. Some of them are on the right. Some of them on the left. But they all add something to your life.
Mm-hmm. Of course. You
know,
yeah.
So to cut all out whole swathes, you know, you might meet the love of your life, and she might be a socialist and you might be a conservative, God forbid. But, you know, at the end of the day, you should never shut down opportunity because of something as silly as that.
Yeah, that's a very good takeaway from that. There's a lot rattling around in my head, but I'll keep that for later on.
Yes, not to be broadcast. Yeah.
Sometimes I think it is. Yeah. And I'm not going to, but there's sometimes things need to be said, and there needs to be a backbone. And anybody that's in business, and this is maybe a segue into being a boss, being an employee, being a leader. And I think leaders are few and far between. I've looked, I've watched, I've listened, and I'm yet to be stunned by the amount of, or the lack of leaders that are actually out there.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, yeah.
I think everybody's going around with what's in it for me, what's in it for me, what's in it for me. And yes, as you said, we have cultural differences, we have disagreements. That doesn't have to be an argument.
No.
What you're trying to do is steer the ship in the right direction. And as a good leader, take the bullets, take the pain to best serve the people behind you and create the pathway. You know, it's not a political rant, but where's your thoughts on leadership of today in the whole UK and the whole business sector? Because businesses are trying to get out there, but they're struggling. And leadership, strong, hard leadership needs to come. And we all know change is going to have to come.
Mm.
But it's who's willing to take the burden and the blow to lead it.
Yeah, I think, you know, so we were talking about it before with the Tony Blair period and stuff. I think what we're seeing now over the last, the current situation and the last 14 years is we've now got the bureaucrats running the major parties. Essentially, that's what they are, they're bureaucrats. You know, most of them have come straight out of university. They've become political advisors or members of think tanks, or they've gone into a law firm, or in Rishi's case, I think it was Goldman Sachs. So in real terms, the front bench and the shadow cabinet are both full of people that have never run businesses,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
or organizations, or, you know, in the military. I mean, not, you know, she was flawed, don't get me wrong, but if you look at Margaret Thatcher's cabinet back, you know, when you were a glimmer in your dad's eye, probably, the cabinet was full of CEOs, former CEOs of massive companies, of defense leaders, generals, people with real hard life experience and success.
Yeah.
Now we're run by a government and a shadow government that have just left power, who've none of that experience.
Yeah.
None of it. And how on earth can they have massive budgets and massive responsibilities when they've never run a corner shop?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, our current prime minister, you know, maybe what he did legally was commendable. It depends who you listen to. But in terms of actually running something from scratch or building something from scratch, we've got a real problem. And this is where Trump is, you know, love him or hate him, I'm a bit neutral, to be honest. I think he's a bit of a misogynist, a bit of a dinosaur, but he's a guy of that generation. And a lot of men, you know, used to treat people the way that he did. And it's just the way that people of that age are. But you can't argue with the fact that his shock tactics do make things quicker. Do make things move quicker than a lot of traditional politics has done for the last 30 years. You know, I mean, he's really roughed things up, whether it comes off Ukraine and, you know, the situation in Gaza and stuff like that, whether it comes off, I don't know. But if he achieves 50% of what he sets out to do, then he's a businessman. And this goes back to what we're talking about, business. You know, he's running a country is a business.
Yep.
It is a business. Should be. You know, it's
really, that's how I
profit
feel
and loss. Yep. And, you know, you've got employees or citizens, and, you know, you've got to do the right thing, but people have got to buy into the program and take responsibility. Yeah.
And I think that's, I'm really watching what I see here, because I can go on an absolute
curveball.
No, man. No, not you, John.
No, I've taken my tablets today. I can't write down. And the more people understand the basics of running a business, the basics of running a country, they'll have more truck with change and why it's going to happen. I think there's got to be a conversation, a story for every change that's happening. That might be long-winded, but as you've alluded to there earlier, Donald Trump, like him, loathe him, whatever, he's creating the shock factor. And if it does create fast moving change, then fantastic, because change is uncomfortable. It's difficult. There's always going to be noses out of joint. Mm. And I know there's a big whole political sphere, and I've not got all the brain capacity for it, but I know what's right and I know what's wrong in a business, and the government that's a business is wrong just now. And I think a lot of people, they can see that, but it always comes down to the leadership, and it always comes down to who's willing to put their neck on the line.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of people that are willing, starting to think, I'm willing to do it, because what's going to come, I think, is a lot worse.
I agree. You know, I mean, a lot of the city boys I know in London, you know, they're anticipating a recession, if we're not already in one, to be honest. And we've got so many social issues and, you know, welfare issues that politicians for the last 20 years have stuck their heads in the sand because it's too politically sensitive for them to deal with it. So they just sit on their hands and they don't deal with it.
I've only got 5 years. I can just do my bit, get my paycheck.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll try my bit. It's a bit too hard, and I don't want to be the person that's going to get blamed.
Yeah, and so, who's the last? If you look at it, who's the last prime minister that was prepared to tell people the truth?
Thatcher.
Was Thatcher, yeah. And she got three terms by telling the truth. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Like Blair, you know, the last term completely came off the tracks and had this emperor's new clothes syndrome where, you know, they thought they listened to the wrong people and thought they were Jesus Christ. I think that happens third term with a lot of prime ministers. But there is no doubt that, I mean, we're in serious trouble.
And this year coming up then, 2025,
yeah.
What would be your advice to business owners or people getting into business?
Sit tight, watch your expenditure, and diversify. Yeah, diversify, yeah. Don't have all your eggs in one basket. Certainly not. I wouldn't, no.
I think that's a great bit of advice, and that's a great way, because we've got the pub to go to soon, haven't we?
We have indeed, Johnny, yeah.
Well, listen, we've got a little strap line, Michael.
I'm going to press a button.
You know what button it is?
I'm going to see.
This is your world.
Shape it.
Or someone else will.
Well, I hope you can hear that.